When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
Shoes run.
All right. Well, I just need to rest my eyes for a minute. All right.
Fine.
Oof.
That is totally fine.
Feeling sick thinking about it. Man.
It's feeling sick thinking about that evening or the next morning.
Yeah, just everything.
You claimed to be dead.
Oh, I was not in a good way. I did not feel like a real human being until like maybe 4 o'clock.
Oh, that's rough.
After the cam touchdowns, or?
Yeah, those helped. I had a Pedialyte popsicle. It was just delicious.
I can't believe it took you that many hours to actually think to put caffeine in your body.
Yeah, yeah, that was the big one. I'm an idiot. Haley also suggested the popsicle several hours before I actually ate one. So,
well, that doesn't come as a surprise really very much at all.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Okay, with that, the Auburn Arena time is,
oh my god,
9:03 p.m. Yeah, I don't think I have to tell anybody that this weekend was not the best. Got a little description of it there. I am Ryan Starrett at Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter. The S stands for still don't want to talk about it, so we'll do our best not to do that. It's a No Crow show tonight. Hosting in-laws, maybe. You know. On the one side of me is the man who struggled Sunday, the AU chief. What's up, chief?
Bienvenidos.
And on the other side, yes, hosting for the first time, the orange and true eternal champ of the week, the better half of Lindiana James, it is Lydia. Hey, Lydia.
Hola, amigos.
She told me she was going to do the intro in Spanish. I think the key was kind of hanging around a little too long. I'm curious how far she can get this. You know.
Not necessarily the tequila hanging around, just my new status as an adopted Mexican-American citizen.
There you go.
I am now a part of the Quintero family without paperwork.
So with that, can we say rock chalk and horns down?
Yeah, saw them off.
Absolutely.
So that was exciting. I didn't catch the end of the game, but it was they were winning most of the game. So what I did see of it, they were winning.
It was fun. Classic Big 12 football where it turned into a shootout. They go to overtime, and Kansas actually did the thing that underdogs are supposed to do on the road. They went for the win. And paid off with a 2-point conversion to a fullback. I don't know if he was a walk-on or not, but it was impressive. If you saw the stadium, there
Fortune.
Was nobody there. This was a game.
Fortune does favor the bold, dear. And did you see the video, or really did you hear the shrill sounds in the video, of the kid's parents who didn't realize their son was scoring on the conversion?
No, I didn't see
I
that.
Did. Oh, yeah, there was a solid
out there.
5 or 6 seconds of them asking, was that him?
It's funny.
It's pretty fan. It's a pretty great reaction video. It's up there with the thread of the one particular Kansas fan some guy kept taking photos of throughout the game. And you can see the progression of his reaction to what's happening on the field as the score changes. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, yes.
If you
yes,
haven't,
that is great.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, go out there and find it. It's readily available on twitter.com.
Yes, it's a great, one of the greatest threads you'll ever see. It's just a joyous. It's great. I feel great. It makes you feel great for other someone else. Just watching him throughout the game. It's good.
It's nice to know that other people experience that emotional roller coaster, and I didn't have to do that.
I will say, for Kansas fans, they've been waiting on that roller coaster to leave the station for about a decade now. So I knew it was bad at Kansas. I didn't realize it was that bad, that this was their first road conference win since 2008.
Yeah,
they were number two in 2007.
Yeah, things have really gone downhill from them since they fired that big, huge man that was their coach.
Mangino. Yeah. Mangino, the big guy. Yeah, the guy that rose to fame on the interwebs thanks to Spencer and the crew at Every Day Should Be Saturday and their lovely Sbarro parody song.
Yeah, you got to be careful with his name, too. It's
you don't have to.
Well, I guess technically you don't have to, sure.
You don't have to do anything but die and pay taxes, as my boss loves to say.
That's a nice, what is that, an idiom? Is that what you would call that? I don't know. I'm the English major.
Let's
I should
say
know.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a great idiom.
With that. All right, well, let's get into some of the less fun parts of this weekend. It's Friday night, Auburn Soccer. We are an Auburn Soccer podcast. Dropped first round of the NCAA tournament game, get Samford. That was not great to see. I mean, it's a Samford team they beat earlier in the season, but just dropped this one 2-0. Couldn't get anything going on the offensive end. And that's the season, which I don't know. It's hard. You know, we've enjoyed this team all year. They've really shown out. They had that great start of the season. You know, they played number one Florida State really tight, and really they were competing for the SEC most of the year. So yeah, it's a rough first round exit. This is still a young team though. A lot of sophomores. They'll be back for at least another year, hopefully two. But
not the way you want to see a season end, but big weekend for Samford sports.
Yeah, got the win here and almost took down Florida.
Yeah, it's just it was a bummer. Here's the way I found out about the score of that game, because I had a lot going on Saturday. I had my two kids early in the day, and because my wife is at work, and I found out the score of the game while driving to the tailgate for. And I drove by the soccer fields and saw people leaving. I was like, oh, the game must be over. Let me look. And I look over, and it was I saw it. And that was a real bummer on top of the total bummer that was on my radio at the time. It's just real, real upsetting. But
0-0 at the half. And then Samford came out, got an early one in the second half. And then I think the second goal was real late in the game. I think maybe in the last 5 minutes or so. And that'll be the last game for a really good group of seniors, especially on the defensive end. We've talked about Alyssa Melanson a lot this year. SEC Defensive Player of the Year, always the fastest girl on the pitch. She's been fantastic. I think she has some shot at a pro career. Was mentioning she'll be playing in the NWSL next year, which doesn't surprise me at all. I'm not super sure. Is it they have a draft, right?
Yes, there is a NWSL draft. Now, there was something going on with that league in the last year, I think, and I'm not real sure what. But I would think that they would still have a draft. She could always also go overseas. There's always that option. So we'll keep an eye on her. I'm sure we can keep the listeners updated about what's going on with her and anybody else that might be going pro or taking their COVID year, which I'm sure that there may be some that do that.
All right. Well,
it's an exciting prospect if you get a good chunk of the team back.
Yeah.
But you never know what opportunities are out there. Thankfully, now they're much more plentiful than they used to be for professional female soccer.
Indeed.
Yeah, it'll be good to see Anna Haddock come back. She was one of the best goal scorers in the SEC this year. Again, she was one of those sophomores that's really come on strong. And then Maddie Brahaska as well in goal, just a sophomore. So I mean, those two right there will be the anchor of the team next year. They'll definitely be competing for the SEC again. Yeah. All right. Do we want to do football or basketball next? I'd just say let's get all the bad stuff out of the way and then kind of follow basketball.
Yeah, just keep hurting my feelings. Let's go for it.
All right. Yeah, you got to eat your veggies first, right?
Yeah.
All right. So I already said I don't really want to talk about this game that much. So I'm just going to go through an analogy right here. Something I've been dealing with at work this past couple weeks. So I'm working on a grill project right now. You guys all know I design grills. Still fairly early in the design process. Don't worry about what the details of it are. But we just got our quotes back from our suppliers. And we were shooting for like a production cost of around $250 to $300. Got our quotes back at around $500. Way, way over budget, right? So we're going through these exercises with product manager and sourcing manager and everybody that's got their hands in this project, just seeing how we can get costs down from feature changes, spec changes, and then just total redesigns for some of it. But it really doesn't matter what we do. Like we're not decreasing a quote in half, pretty much, in the course of a couple weeks. And even if we do, we're going to be late on our timeline. Right. So this project's dead, more or less. I mean, we can keep pretending like it matters. We can nitpick at it. We can talk about what all the problems are, but it's FUBAR, right? Mm-hmm. That's what this football game is. We can sit here, we can talk about it, we can diagnose what the issues were. There's not one thing that's magically going to be like, oh yeah, if we had just done that, or if the refs had just made this call, or you know, there's not that. When you give up 40 unanswered points at home to a team you're more talented than, that's on everybody. That's on the offense, it's on the defense, on the coaching, it's on the people that left at halftime. A little bit.
Indeed. I thought about that much that afternoon.
I don't think anybody wants to sit here and listen to us nitpick it, though. Do they? I don't want to do it.
No, I would like to... go ahead, Lydia.
Oh, I think enough people have thought about it on the internet this entire weekend that there's nothing we can say at this point that hasn't already been said and repeated and beaten into the ground like the dead horse that it is.
The only thing I would want to say about it is I do think that there is one good thing from that game. I mean, Bo Nix was really good in that game.
He was.
And he was hurt like most of the game.
I thought you were about to give us a hot take, but you just dropped a fact.
And it's not the first time he's blown up a Mississippi team, so I guess, that's not that shocking. But I don't know. It's really depressing. It kind of feels like the season's over, right? that alone, I think, is something you can take away from that game. Like, a guy that people thought, a lot of people thought was just done a few games into this season. I mean, played really great. And
not just great in the way that we've seen Bo be great. Like, oh, he's running around, he's making plays, you know, he's backyard Bo. That wasn't that.
Right.
This was Bo Nix making passes, avoiding pressure, hitting guys downfield, and short intermediate passes. I mean, he was, what did he start? Like 10 for 10, 11 for 11?
If you have
57-yard rush by Javarius Johnson, which is backwards pass, basically.
That's another thing that was good early in the game. I felt like I've heard and seen a lot of people talk about how we were awful running the ball, and we were throughout the game. But at the beginning, when we were doing really well, we were not. We were good. We had some good running. Tank looked pretty good. Jarquez looked all right. Sean Shivers did okay. Like, everybody did pretty good. And then, of course, the big
Javarius Johnson.
Javarius Johnson, yeah. Non-pass, lateral pass.
And that's
pass.
One of those where, I mean, it is a rush, but
right.
That still requires exactly. A good pass for Bo to hit him in stride. Too many times we've seen him, even if it's a completed pass, it'd be an off-target pass, and then it just kind of kills the play, right?
Yeah.
But that was, it was a perfect pass. It's what we've wanted to see out of Bo all year, the last 3 years. This was the point in the movie where the heroes got it all figured out, right? It's working. Everything's they've been through the struggle. They figured it out, and then they get to the big boss, and it just.
And it should be noted, like, you would think that, oh, well, he just collapsed late, and that's why we couldn't win. He still played well down the stretch. It wasn't
he wasn't near as good, but he wasn't bad.
Right.
Well, he was.
There were some bad passes.
But, yeah.
Well, but this is the maturity that we've wanted to see out of Bo as he's progressed over the last few years. And the leaps and bounds that he's made just this season have really spoken to the difference in coaching that he's had this just year. And to see him excel and to see him grow that much, and then just to have the team result not match, and to literally add injury to insult, you got to feel for the kid.
Yeah, it is a bummer. And I know I started out on a positive, but it's a bummer that it just went down like that. I still want to kind of turn it around and call this a positive. I know that there's been a lot of we're Auburn fans. We tend to overreact sometimes. We tend to take one, two things and extrapolate out from that. Yeah. So, and I know there's some questions about the coaching that's been going on. But you cannot deny that Bo Nix has benefited from the coaching that he's received this year.
I think that's probably been the thing, the most obvious of improved coaching is the development of Bo Nix. I mean, we can sit here and talk about play calling and all these other things. That is the coach's responsibility, right? But just on a player development for Bo Nix, that has gone well.
The improvements in his footwork alone have been worth whatever changes have been made.
Yeah, right.
Just for him personally, if he ever decides to attempt to move past this level, or if he just decides this is it and he's done, to see him reach a potential that we all wanted to see out of him from the beginning, to see the 5-star recruit that came out of high school, and to see him reach a ceiling that we all hoped was there, really has been a good thing, even if the rest of the results haven't been exactly what we wanted to see. You can't argue with what's happening at the quarterback position. And there's going to be some people probably that are going to argue it this week, but we won't talk about that yet.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing is there's a big question mark on the offensive line going into next year. And that's really, that may be the difference on whether we may have seen the apex of Bo's career. Cause if that position is not any better next year, it's hard to imagine that Bo will keep improving even more. If he hangs around for his COVID year in 2023, then we may have to wait till 2023 to really see.
2023 is the year. We'll
yeah.
Be focused.
Yeah. Well, maybe it is. I mean,
this was the year.
Well, it was. Now it's not.
Okay.
All right, so I'd like to apologize
for any strange noises you may hear coming from this end of the call, as I have now gotten myself a guest host in furry form.
Ah,
so
Lana.
If you hear any strange grunting noises, barking, it's her, not me.
I thought that was going to be James, honestly.
I mean, I guess theoretically it could be, but this is Lanita. She does what she wants.
That she does.
So if you've been living under a rock, though, I mean, we've talked about Bo got hurt. Found out Sunday he broke his right ankle, his fibula. Lydia, you're our doctor person here, right? What does this mean?
Not a doctor.
Not a doctor, but, more so than us. What does this mean for a quarterback? I mean, tell us what is going on here. If he has a broken ankle, what is that going to mean for him trying to pass the ball and still keep playing?
Thankfully, with Bo being right-handed, it's not his plant leg. So he has that going for him. But as much as he scrambles, it's going to be very difficult for him. It's that first step coming off his, what you would consider to be his dominant side. So if I saw correctly in pictures that have been floating around the interwebs, he's in a cast, which is going to mean significant immobilization. You always worry about atrophy in those situations, but I have all the faith in the world and the training staff that they'll get him back to a competitive level. With bone breaks, though, the biggest hurdle is always that mental hurdle. Not that I would consider Bo to be one of those guys I would worry about very much, because he seems like very much a competitor, very much the kind of guy that's not going to let that sort of thing, that fear, kind of eat at the back of his mind and affect his rehab and his play once he does return. But I mean, anytime you're dealing with a broken bone, it's a long road and it can be frustrating. And if mechanically, anything, he should be fine.
If anything, we'd probably be afraid of him going the Sean White route and getting back too soon and not taking care of it. Trying to play
or through. breaking your bone during the game and not just continuing to play on it because you don't know it's that bad, but knowing it's that bad, but you just don't want to come out.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referencing?
I'm not referencing any of the other Sean White stuff. So.
Well, I was going to ask if you meant, getting, taken into custody.
Hopefully across the street from the police department.
yeah, exactly.
I think Bo just let his adrenaline carry him through that injury, and once the adrenaline wore off, then there it was. I don't think it was I'm going to try and power through this because I don't want to come out sort of situation.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I saw a couple. It was so drastic. From the first half to the second half, Because that occurred right before the half, if I remember correctly, didn't it? Maybe right after.
I can't remember exactly. It was pretty. I can't remember exactly where it happened.
But you can tell, like later in the third quarter, he was not just somewhat missing. He was missing by 5 yards, and yeah. You know, it seemed like the only passes he was really hitting were he just threw it up and his guy could get under it.
Yeah.
I don't remember at what point he went into the medical tent.
Right.
That was early.
He came out
for several possessions.
I think that's when it was probably broken. I don't know what he did to it early on. It may have been a stress fracture or something slight, and maybe. Then just kept going and kept going and made it worse and worse is probably my totally wild speculation
of Hefe here today.
But I mean, the fact that he hurt that ankle early, then hurt it worse later on, and then finally like couldn't even go back in, I think is
as Braves fans, it's what we saw out of Charlie Morton in the World Series, right? I mean, it's not the same injury necessarily, but it's a lower leg injury. And Charlie, broke it, pitched another inning, struck out Jose Altuve. He was rocking it, and then eventually, couldn't keep going.
Yeah, went to a pitch and realized, oh, I can't. Which is just adrenaline wearing off, I would imagine.
Yeah. All right, so
it's a hell of a drug in the world of Rick James. Mm-hmm.
Bo's going to be out for the year. He's having surgery sometime this week.
It's already done, bud.
Already today. So by the time you're listening, by the time we're recording, already happened. TJ Finley, definitely going to be the starter this week. I do want to talk about how kind of shit situation he got put in at the end of that game.
Yeah.
I understand it was, hey, Bo really can't go back out there, but either you should have put TJ in the third quarter when you knew Bo was hurt, and that way he has some sort of a chance to find a rhythm, get something going, not have to try and score 2 touchdowns in 3 minutes. Or you just don't put him in because he was in an unwinnable situation. You know, it's easy to kind of sit there and be like, oh, what is he doing with that fumble on the 12-yard line? But he had to try something. I mean, it's...
He had to.
I don't fault him too much on that. I did think it was funny that
he's a competitor just like anybody else.
Yeah.
You know? I think it was funny that we gave him a hard time after the Georgia State game because that was more or less the same kind of spin move we tried there. And we all kind of said, hey, that was great. It's not going to work against SEC. Exactly. And it sure didn't work against an SEC team.
No.
Mm-mm.
Well, and I don't think it did him any favors to, like you said, put him in when Bo's in the tent and then pull him and then, okay, now you really have to go in and all of the preparation and all of your, I mean, coming off the bench is hard enough anyway, but to be yo-yoed in and out of the game like that, it'll mess with your head if you're not already in the right space.
Well, I
am interested to see what he'll do, you know, having a whole game just for himself.
Sure.
But I don't think we've gotten enough of a sample size of him really this year to have any idea what's coming at us.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys that, unfortunately for him, his skill set is not super compatible with his offense just because we can't block. He's somebody that I feel like you had a solid offensive line that you trusted to kind of give him a few seconds to, you know, work the ball downfield. He could be really effective.
He's got a great arm.
He really does. But the South Carolina team, I don't think we're going to find out a ton. I guess they're not a great pass defense. We can get into that a little more here in a minute, but. Yeah, I don't know. We're going to learn something. I don't think it's going to tell us anything about how he's going to play against Alabama, though, or anything about if he should be, you know, our quarterback next year. I think Bo has shown if he's healthy, he should be the quarterback next year. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious if there's
good thing
any
about
level
camp
of,
starting in the summer is that there's plenty of recovery time.
Right. I do wonder if there's any level of if he struggles, is it just his, is it just him for the rest of the year, no matter what? Is there a way Demetrius Davis gets in the game? Are there packages for him? I would kind of hope. I mean, at this point, his red shirt is locked in. Davis's is.
Right.
Because you can play in four games now. We only have three games left with the bowl game. So I would like to see him get some sort of playing time the rest of the year. But we honestly have no idea what that's going to look like.
I am interested to see how much patience the coaching staff has with Finley coming into a situation like this that obviously no one ever expected. To see if they'll get frustrated with him and bench him like they did Bo early on, or if they'll give him the reins and say, okay, this is your team. Do what you need to do until we're done. So,
yeah, I mean,
I think it's going to tell us a lot about the coaching staff too, not necessarily about our depth so much, but I think it'll tell you a lot about how much trust they want to put in kids or how much experimenting they want to do from here on out. And I'm really interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, I kind of think that they have to stick with him because at this point, I don't think Davis has really been taking any snaps in practice because TJ is getting some ones or was for a while and all the twos reps. So it'll just be weird. They've got to figure things out now because what if TJ gets hurt? They've got to have some
Don't
sort of plan.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
Well, hey, somebody's got to think about it. I mean, obviously they do because, I mean, anything can happen. And then you've got to have a plan of some sort. So do you say, okay, well, we'll put some packages in for literally everyone here that's played quarterback, which would be Kobe and Kalen Newton has played quarterback at college and JJ Pegues. Do we get a little bit of that?
He could get weird. He could get weird. I wouldn't put necessarily anything by Harsin and Bobo at this point. I mean, they've not been afraid to try trick plays, not so much packages, but
right.
But it was easier to do when you had a clear number one quarterback. At this point, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I don't.
You know what? Let's lean into that. Let's get weird. Why not?
Yeah.
You got to lose at this point. So
yeah. One other injury in this game, right there at the end, Anders Carlson tears his ACL in the onside kick attempts. That's really unfortunate. I mean, he's had a rough year. We don't really want to get into that, but he's been a really good kicker for us for 3 years now.
Yeah. This is
honestly,
year
I don't
four,
know.
Right?
Well, he redshirted his freshman year.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So I don't know who the backup kicker is. Auburn hasn't had to think about this.
He has kicked
8 years.
Behind Carlson, sure, but
right.
None of the Auburn kickers have gotten hurt. You know, Daniel never missed a game, Byram never missed a game, Cody Carson.
Right.
Missing games, it's been a pretty high quality and consistent position for Auburn for a long time.
Yeah,
and usually you've had the next guy in there for at least a year before he's officially the kicker. McPherson is still a year out. He's going to be coming in next year, but. I don't know who it is now. Is it Oscar Chapman?
Dude, no, the other guy has already kicked a field goal this year.
Field goals are extra points.
Well, maybe extra.
Is it Evan McGuire?
this sounds right. I can't remember the guy's name.
Honestly, I would like
apologies to say, him and his family.
Let's go for it on fourth down whenever we can.
It says a lot about our kicking game that we haven't had to think about someone not in the last name Carlson since 2013.
It's true.
I mean, that all other names have kind of gone blank out of all of our minds says a lot about how lucky we've been in this regard. However you want to look at it. But, you know, the rest of the football world likes to say we're lucky, so why not lead into that too?
Sure. I mean, if you're Alabama fans know all four of their kickers' names, because you know any one of them could be the guy they hate the most that week. So
all right, let's talk about South Carolina just a little bit. I know a lot of the fan base is checking out on this game already, but 7-5s or potentially 8-4 is a lot different than dropping this game and staring down 6-6. So this is a big one. You know, keep that momentum going into recruiting season. But that's the same thing South Carolina's looking at. They are 5-5 right now, finishing with us and then Clemson. They got to win one of these games to get to a bowl in Shane Beamer's first year.
I'd like to vote for Clemson, and just in case anyone is keeping track of that, that's how I would like that to go.
I would definitely prefer them to be the Lake Tigers.
Yes,
but
please.
they've been a pretty bad team this year, but you know they also went and hung 40 on Florida. I understand now that's not really an accomplishment. But you know, Auburn's had their fair share.
Couldn't happen to a better guy down there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we could have just hated on Dan Mullen this whole podcast. That would have been fun.
I talked for a really long time about that.
That was a funny thing during the game. Even as things were going south, they kept showing the Florida Samford highlights on the big screen, and there were very loud cheers from everybody, but concentrated loud cheers from the Mississippi State section. I'm Samford's court.
It's funny.
The mysteries of life. I wonder what that's about. It's nice that we could bond over something because two fan bases and opposition.
That's so different after all.
Yeah.
You know, I just realized we lost to your Mississippi State Bulldogs, Ryan.
There it is.
Wouldn't go that far.
Did your brother talk any trash to you?
No, he was happy that they had won 4 in the last 13. So he thought that was a pretty good accomplishment.
All right. Good deal.
But again, we're done with Mississippi State.
Yeah. On to South Carolina. Sorry.
South Carolina.
let's beat them. I know a lot of
they
people.
They are extremely anemic offense. I mean, they're pretty much any metric. They're around 100 in the country. You know, 130 teams, so not great. They're on their third quarterback of the year. This is the guy that was backing up the former grad student. So if that tells you anything, they're not feeling great about that. He threw the ball 3 whole times against Missouri last week in the game that they were losing. And then rushed for minus 50 yards. So
I'd like to see, with an offense that anemic, I'd like to see our defense get some confidence back under them after that second half where they gave up so much. I mean, that had to be just a straight kick in the teeth, especially after the questionable or not so questionable, whatever, targeting call on TD. You take an already frustrated defense and then hit them with that. I'd like to see them do what they do best again, and that's stopping the run. So if that's all South Carolina thinks they can do, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's not like we've been very good at running anyway. So You know what? Go ahead and stop it. We're probably going to have to pass our way out of this one anyway. So,
yeah. So their defense, I think I misspoke earlier. They, if they do anything well, it is defending the pass. I mean, they're
great.
They're average. against the pass. They give up their 60th in the country in yards per play passing game. They somehow have just a boatload of interceptions. They've got 14 picks on the year, which is third of the country.
Oh, that doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from.
Great.
There's one guy, safety Jalen Foster, has five of them, and he is a
Moses.
Right, and he was a FCS. He played at Gardner Webb to start his career. Transferred to South Carolina as a walk on. Got on scholarship this year, and then is just kind of going off. But okay. We'll see. I mean, this Mississippi State game aside,
that guy.
Yeah, this Mississippi State game aside, Auburn has beaten the teams that they're more talented than and lost to the teams they're less talented than this year. I mean, pretty evenly again until this Mississippi State game. And even then, we were up 28-3, and, you know, shit happens. This
what
is
do
a
you
team.
Know about that, Mr. Falcons fan?
Okay.
Man, the daggers.
Anyways, Braves won the World Series. I don't care. Auburn is more talented than the South Carolina team, even down Bo Nix. Even down Owen Papo. I don't know if he's going to be back this week or not. Even down Anders Carlson. So, I'd like to see this team focus up and go back to beating up on bad teams.
Yeah, that would be nice. And this, I mean, it would just be nice to have one more fun game where we're not all tense. And, you know, I'm not giving up on the Iron Bowl or anything, but it seems like a uphill battle at this point. And it would just be nice to have one more where we can all be happy for a week and then whatever else happens after that happens.
And then you can all go watch basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is the worst week to not have a basketball game.
Yeah. All right, let's take a commercial and then talk about the basketball team. All right, and we are back at 41 minutes into the show. All right, let's break down first the Morehead State, the ULM games. Morehead State, Will kind of told us last week that this was a team we might should look out for. They were they won the OVC tournament last year and were good in the regular season as well. Auburn kind of went in and especially early had their way with them. They were up 30-6 pretty quickly in that game. It never felt like a super clean game. I mean, maybe clean is not the right word because we did a good job taking care of the ball. But it wasn't cohesive on the offensive end. It felt like there was a lot of talent that was still figuring out how to play together. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it was fine. It was it's one of the better openers I've seen us play in. Sure. You know, it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't. I didn't come out of it with any major complaints at all, really. Even thought, you know, some of the things I might have been concerned about were not a concern in that game. So, it was nice to be back watching basketball. And, you know, I guess I've kind of felt like you could come away from that game watching it and think, oh, this Jabari Smith guy, I thought he was supposed to be this really good player or whatever, but he still had a double-double. So,
he only had 8-6 against Morehead.
Okay. Okay. I thought he had
double-double. So he had a double-double in the exhibition, struggled a little bit in this one.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I say struggle, I mean, he still had 153 offensive rating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was this really good?
What was his PER for that one?
PER for games is kind of weird to look at because like it's never above like 18.
Okay.
But I mean, he was still really good in this game.
Yeah.
Again, 8.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. And, like, he stuffed the stat sheet, and we say, oh, he didn't play that well in his first career game.
He's a guy that, like, you can watch him, and he'll have a game like that, and people just may not – they may not get it, kind of. Like, it's just kind of a thing where, oh, I don't get it. And it may take a while before he's going to have a game where he just dominates, where I think most of the fan base will finally be like, oh, that's what we have on our hands. Okay.
Yeah. So in that Moorhead game, he was 3-6 from the field, 2-3 from three. I mean, that's fine. That's good efficiency.
Yeah. How many minutes?
He was just 21.
That's going to be my next question. Yeah. I mean, with guys this young, it's going to be hot and cold.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, until they figure each other out, until they gel together, you're going to get some streaky moments. You're going to get some questionable dead periods where you start to worry that the offense is never coming back.
Yeah.
But I think – oh, wait, I'm talking about football again. Sorry. I do think – I mean, I think this team is just far and away so much more just pure talent than even the teams that we've gotten used to in the last couple of years out of Bruce, that even I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to get too excited, but like the ceiling on this team just seems so high that if they can figure it out and play as a unit, I'm not going to, you know, hyperbole too much and say best team ever or whatever, but I'm willing to see how far they go.
Well, I don't think you'd be crazy to say something like that. It is the most talented. It's the most talented team that we've had.
Yeah, I mean,
from 1 through 10, like,
right. The second unit on this team competes with most, if not all, of the last 20 years starting five for Auburn. I mean, the Final Four team, Jaren Bryce, is going to eat this team up. That's fine. Sorry, the second team, at least.
Yeah.
And then the Isaac Okoro COVID team probably is still going to beat the bench players on here. Outside of that, I mean, think about it. And especially when you get Alan Flanagan back. Let's say he's coming back off the bench. Your backups are Katie Johnson, Alan Flanagan, Chris Moore, Jalen Williams, and Dylan Cardwell. That's still a tournament five.
Heck of a lineup.
Like, yeah.
It really is top to bottom the most impressive roster I've seen at Auburn. And I think a lot of other people would say the same.
Yeah, I think so. And, it may not be – this team may not – they're not going to go undefeated. It's just
– nobody does. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think anyone would in basketball.
Way too many games.
They may not win the conference, you know, during the regular season. But, buddy, 11D is a team that will be extremely hard to beat in a tournament. So – it's exciting. And part of the fun of these teams and is that part that you mentioned, Lydia, where they're just guys figuring each other out, figuring out how to play together, figuring out how to play at this level in some of their cases, like Jabari specifically. That's fun for me. I like watching that stuff. It can be stressful, obviously, but which it was a little bit on Friday night against UL
Monroe. It was until it really wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'll go into that game. So Auburn struggles in the first half. Really just can't get anything going offensively. Lets ULM kind of have a flurry at the end of the half. On their end of the court, goes down 2 at the half. And then still covered on a 24-point line. So, you know, Solid second half, definitely headlined by Jabari just kind of taking the game over. We were just saying that, he had a quiet opener where he stuffed the stat sheet. Really, he played amazing in this game.
Yeah.
23 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. The only downside is the 4 turnovers, but, you know, that's okay. That's okay, honestly. Like, when you're creating 4 steals and 2 blocks, I'm all right with it.
Yeah. He's young, too. It'll sure. happen. It's fine.
Every bit is advertised with the shot. We talked all offseason of like, oh, okay, this guy was a great 3-point shooter in high school. That doesn't always translate to college. If he can do that in college, then he might be the best player we ever seen here. but if he shoots like he did in this one, he's not going to be stopped. It was beautiful.
His shot is so beautiful. It is
from everywhere on the floor too. Not just 3-point stroke, not just going to the basket. He had a turnaround shot at the elbow. He had a couple mid range. He's a 3-level scorer. It was impressive.
Yeah, I'm just totally excited about it. Even more than I already was. Just having seen him twice. If you have a chance to see this kid in person, please take it, because he's just fun to watch. He reminds me of a guy that I played with, obviously extremely better, because the guy I played with did not end up in the NBA. He was also 6 inches shorter, so that may have had something to do with it. That guy won the Division II tournament MVP, though, so he was pretty good. But just long, can shoot from anywhere, and can dribble, can defend. He's the whole package, man. And I am I'm excited.
I want to talk about Katie Johnson.
I think he's gonna.
Go ahead, Lydia.
I was just gonna say, it's a beautiful thing when mechanics and good fundamentals come together and you have a guy that's just purely talented and you see those beautiful shots. Mm-hmm. Don't think he's going to stick around long enough to break Bryce's 3-point record.
No.
Unfortunately. It'd be cool if he did, but not going to happen.
Sure.
So let's just enjoy him while we got him.
Maybe he just wants to, hang out at college.
Good luck with that.
We can get him an NIL deal where he's making, 8 figures a year.
Yeah, I was going to say. get your company on that, Ryan. They can
I just sell some more grills. I think I'm working on. Yeah. All right, so Katie Johnson, we talked about him a little bit, but he was the other big part of kind of spurring the offense in the second half. Every bit is advertised. Strong at the rim. Well, I guess technically not in this one. He didn't go to the rim in the first game more so. But he was 4 or 5 from 3 in the second half, got the free throw line, played just tenacious defense. There was the one possession, and Ferg was talking about it on the Observer today, where he basically went for a steal 3 times within 15 seconds or so. Missed the first 2 times, but the guy never really got set and got into the possession, and then he got the steal on the 3rd attempt. And he was just eating guys lunch. On ULM.
He is not a player that I expected to love as much as I do already.
Ooh, dropping the L word already.
Yeah, he is so... He is not afraid to talk some trash to people. He is.
Yeah, that was wearing red and black about 8 months ago.
I know. That's why I did not expect to like him as much as I do. I know that's kind of silly, but whatever.
Mark Shane.
I would absolutely hate if I was playing against him, like as a player playing against him. He has to be just a nightmare to play against, because he is nonstop every minute that he's on the floor, and he is just a little bowling ball of a dude, and strong, can dribble, not afraid to embarrass people off the dribble, can pass. He is so fun to watch, And, you know, he might not be the best guy on this team, although he may be the most efficient, despite being super inefficient the first game.
He's going to get shots. And some days that's going to lead to a lot of points.
Well, I didn't realize until listening to the Observer Pod that he was known as being efficient. He was a really efficient player last year. If he keeps that up, I mean, imagine just having a guy like that coming off the bench all year, or a guy like Zeb Jasper coming off the bench. Either one coming off the bench. That's just like a 1-2 punch that is just exciting.
Yeah. Or both of them coming off the bench when Alan Flanagan's back.
Yeah, right.
Or Alan Flanagan coming off the bench. There's so many ways you can go about that. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see the lineups come SEC play. Mm-hmm.
Chris Moore.
Chris Moore, career night in this game. Talk about a guy who really was getting to the basket. He had two and ones within 5 minutes of real time. Was 6 of 6 from the stripe. Just if he's a guy that can be doing that against SEC caliber opponents later in the year, again, off the bench. I don't know what else to say about him. He was 16 points, 4 rebounds, and again, a super efficient night. He might be making that same leap that Alan Flanagan made from freshman to sophomore year.
Yeah.
In that, you know, he wasn't really a contributor much on the offensive end as a freshman. Chris Moore had a couple games where he, you know, was a good shooter from three, but you could tell he still wasn't super comfortable in the offense.
I think his plus minus was really good though, right? His freshman year.
Freshman year, yeah. Well, a lot of guys off the bench last year had decent plus minus. Like him and Dylan Cardwell were awesome with that.
Yeah.
Chris Moore in this one, yeah, 21 minutes. He was plus 19.
Very good.
Very good. I mean, honestly, through two games, we could sit here and say something positive about every single player on the roster right now.
Yeah, I love this team so much, and I am so excited for the rest of the season. I hate that we have to wait like two weeks before another home game.
Yeah, after our next home game is not until December 1st, I believe.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Yeah. But there's still going to be some good basketball between now and then. You get the Atlanta Strip, hopefully beating up on USF this Friday. Any last observations about these first two games before we dive into the USF game?
No, I'm good.
Sadly, no.
My last comment is I didn't expect the ball control to be this good on the team. They're really limiting the turnovers. Had no unforced turnovers in the first game, and yep, only a handful of them against ULM. Devin Cambridge and Katie Johnson both with zero turnovers through two games. That's great to see. Hopefully that's a trend that continues, though. All right. South Florida. Friday night, 6 o'clock Central, ESPN+. Playing this game in Amalie Arena, which is the Lightning Stadium, where the SEC tournament will be this year.
Didn't realize
big
that.
Narrative.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's the whole reason we're going down there, I think, is Bruce wanted to get a game in that arena. These guys used to shoot in there a little bit. I've been talking to Will about this team today, and he's doesn't have much good to say about them. He actually has a degree from USF, so he's fairly familiar with this team. They are extremely young and not great. Yeah, they're 340th out of the 360 or so teams in the country in experience. Auburn's not that far ahead of them, but, you know, I mean, these guys are averaging less than a year of experience in this team.
You can say
that about a lot of Kentucky teams, too, so I'm not certain that that's a huge metric to put a lot of stock in.
don't think they're recruiting a bunch of one and done. They are a fairly tall team. They're averaging about a half inch taller than Auburn across the board.
Wow.
They're 43rd in the country height. And, you know, Auburn's not a short team. But it's interesting in that they've had a significant height advantage in all three of their games so far this year. They've won two of them, but all three opponents they've played have been 250th or worse in KenPom. And they've struggled scoring in these games. You'd think with that height advantage, that wouldn't be an issue. They're 280th in offensive efficiency and worse than that shooting. Effective field goal percentage of just 41%, which is lower than what Auburn's given up in the first two games. Do you want me to tell you what they are from three?
No.
Okay, I won't.
That was starting to sound a little bit like hope, Ryan.
This is a game that, you know, they're, for whatever reason, Auburn always struggles in those early season road games. You know, you go to Mobile and play South Alabama, and Isaac Okoro has to hit a game winner. This team is not that, I don't think. Anything can happen in college basketball, but if we don't win by double digits in this game, I'll be severely disappointed.
Yeah, what does KenPom think we're going to win by?
I think it was 18 or so.
Yeah, that seems about right. I would think.
That feels good.
Actually, only 12, just because it's a road game.
Oh, still. Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, they're 194th in KenPom and trending downwards since the start of the year.
It's not that old a year.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they've struggled against three really bad opponents, even if they beat one through those games. So they're already going in the wrong direction. Their best player is a pretty big dude, Texas Tech transfer Russell Chawa. I think he's averaging about 9 or 10 points a game, but he's 7'2", 260. So he'll be the first real big Walker Kessler and Dylan Cardwell to match up against.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a couple good games already this year. I think he struggled against NCA&T tonight. I haven't seen a stat line. But yeah, it'll be good to see. We've kind of – one criticism I guess we have had is that despite his size advantage, Kessler's kind of gotten not had his way in the paint.
Yeah.
So this will be interesting against a guy that his height.
Exactly. You always hope somebody with size like that kind of brings the fire out of your bigs.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be a problem for Dylan. Not much needed to spark the fire in that one, and that's what I love about the kid.
Lucas is
I am interested.
Love it.
I'm really interested to see how Kessler responds to that sort of opponent.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch him at all at UNC last year, so I don't, I don't have any prior knowledge on that. But I too wonder how that's going to happen. That is a big question for me as well about how does he play against? How does he defend a guy that's just big and strong rather than the kind of guys he's defended recently? You know, I guess ULM had a guy, or was it Moorhead that had the one guy that was pretty good? It was Moorhead that had the guy that was pretty good inside, and they did a good job against him.
Not quite as big, though.
Right, exactly.
So that'll be kind of the matchup I'm keeping an eye on. Again, feel pretty good about this game. It's a good shot to take this team on the road, you know, see how they handle that. And then they're going to Atlantis next week. So that'll be where the real fun begins. We'll preview that a little bit more next week, though.
Yes.
Hopefully after
a horrible road trip to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Totally hate to have to go there.
Well, just, there's what a bummer.
I have a feeling if there wasn't an iron bowl at home, that perhaps someone on this pod may have been attempting to try to go to the Bahamas.
Might be tempted, but have you tried to stay at the Atlantis, Chief?
I haven't. I have not.
Not a cheap hotel.
Oh,
I'm just gonna throw that out there.
All right.
Oh no, it's quite the.
It's not a Sandals resort.
We're talking about a resort with multiple buildings of rooms, a casino,
a basketball,
an entire water park, and a basketball court.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't sound fishy.
No, it's absolutely gorgeous. Don't get it twisted. It is a sight to behold for sure.
I wonder, but, do you to attend the games? Do you have to stay there? I wonder.
I doubt it.
I've never looked.
But why wouldn't you want to? I mean, it's like Vegas on an island.
Yeah,
it's like a tiny little Vegas on an island. It's amazing.
I know Auburn was selling some packages several months back where it was flight included, four nights at the Atlantis, tickets to games, Thanksgiving dinner, and some other credit for something for the weekend. But I can't remember what they were going for, but it was some obscene number.
If you could afford whatever package Auburn was offering, it would be, if you just got money to just blow, I would do it, because that would be an amazing fun trip. Because it'd be you, the team, and like no more than 100 Auburn people probably. And it would be fantastic.
A bunch of Bahamian locals, and let me tell you, those people are amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this week. I will step in for Tro and say, have a wonderful weekend.
Bone nose.
That was the saddest bone nose ever.